Welcome to the Culinary Voices Podcast, where we highlight individuals in the hospitality and food service industry and give them a platform to tell their stories. I'm your host, Nathaniel Baker. If you haven't already, please like, follow, or subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. Today I sat down with Charmaine Jones at her workspace in Washington, D.C. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist and owner of Food Jonesy. We discuss her career, business, and how she connects nutrition with those in her community. Now on to the episode. That's kind of a thing. So you've been a dietitian for 5 years now.
Yes.
Yeah, but you told me you were a career changer.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your initial career?
My initial career was a nutrition paraprofessional.
Okay.
At first, it was just something to get me started into the work field, right? When I first thought about becoming a dietitian, I worked at WIC.
Okay.
That was my first time ever hearing about a dietitian. But way before then, when I graduated, I was an environmental teacher at this camp.
Okay.
When I graduated, I thought I was going to do something in environmental science. I thought I was going to be a tree hugger. I mean, that was my background, environmental right. science. Then it was, I was a teacher at this camp where there was like affluent young kids that came from affluent backgrounds would come to this camp for like 3 weeks. We would teach them environmental science, trees, blah, 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 blah. And they just wasn't appreciative. You know, they didn't appreciate what I had studied so hard for to teach. So I knew that just wasn't for me anyways. And plus, I just got tired of being outdoors. So I came back home and I landed a job at WIC, and I worked under a dietitian.
Okay.
And that was the very first time I learned about dietitian and nutrition and food and all of that stuff.
So that's what sparked what you're doing now.
Yes.
All right. So growing up though, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in DC.
So growing up in DC, you knew you wanted to do something that would be essentially giving back, as you said, environmental and like helping people is what the goal was.
Well, not when I initially, when I was in high school, I wanted to be an orthodontist.
Okay.
So I guess it was, I guess you, if you think on that line, yeah, I wanted to give back. I wanted to help someone. I wanted to help people. Yeah.
Okay. What kept you from doing the orthodontia thing? What moved that path? Oh, okay.
Physics.
Did you wind up going into schooling for to be an orthodontist? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So when I got to school, I was just like, ooh, when I have physics is part of this? Nah, I don't think so. So I just took another route, and I thought environmental science was cool. I did like the advocacy part of environmental science though.
Okay.
So I did, I guess that was that passion of, you know, advocating for people, helping people, believing in something that you really, that can improve communities or whatever. But again, when I graduated from college, I went to teach at this really nice camp in New Jersey. And I was just like, no, this is not for me.
Right.
No.
You wanted to give back more to the people.
Yes.
Someone that you felt would probably appreciate what you were trying to do more.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know what? When I, during my internship at as a senior in college, I got an internship at Howard University Gene Ethics Unit.
Okay.
And to be honest, I think that was that first spark when I had to do research and I had learned that Black people had the worst health.
Okay.
And I was just like, we got the worst health? The way I grew up, I never thought we had the worst health because we didn't know. I grew up in a low income community. So what we ate is what we ate. So I never thought that Black people would ever had the worst health
right. In
research. But still, that kind of like,
and the causes behind why the health in most urban communities is the way it is within food deserts, which we'll get to.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So you started off wanting to be an orthodontist,
mm-hmm.
realized, hey, that's not the path for me.
Exactly.
Transitioned into, you said?
Environmental science.
Environmental, I was going to say earth science. Environmental science. Same. Environmental science. And then you got a job at WIC where you were working under a dietitian.
Yes.
And then something with that. So how did that experience make you want to go into what you're doing now?
Okay, so the dietitian I was working under was a white dietitian.
Okay.
And we had to create food and nutrition programs for Ward 8. Ward 8, for those who are not from D.C., is considered a low-income area, mm-hmm. predominantly Black. And so we had to create these food and nutrition programs for women who was living in Ward 8, low-income women. So what sparked my interest and really one, and I really said, you know what, this is for me. When I created a nutrition program and the supervisor, she was my supervisor, she actually facilitated the workshop. Mm-hmm. But it was something she said that kind of threw me off. She was a skinny little white lady and she was like, you know, if you all stop eating meat, you all can look like me, like small. And this one lady, one participant said, honey, I'm not going to stop eating meat because my man loved meat on my bones. So I was just like, I really think nutrition will be well accepted to Black women if it came from someone who share their same culture and can understand.
Understanding.
Yep.
Because there's a... I know there's a popular movement now, especially with social media, you see mm-hmm. that people are starting to understanding that diet culture mm-hmm. has its own issues and where it's based out of. Like, I saw a post the other day, it said the reason why healthy food is considered bland is because it comes from the Eurocentric mindset.
Right.
Of, I'm not going to go too far, but like the Eurocentric mindset of the rice and chicken.
Right.
Whereas if you look at even like the Mediterranean cultures mm-hmm. or Asian, there's Japanese, mm-hmm. very light, mm-hmm. but flavorful.
Right, but right.
A lot of the big gym bros, the guys that are recommending the chicken and rice or the white rice and just boneless, skinless chicken breast, are a certain type, right?
Right, right.
So there's some privilege that comes from that.
Exactly. So I was thinking to myself, I was like, yeah, she's a vegetarian. She's from California. She's telling these Black women from the city basically to become a vegetarian in order for you to lose weight.
Right. So that on its own, just being from a completely different state, because California is its own
yeah.
country. Most of it is. So because you have California cuisine, which is a lighter fare when as opposed to East Coast.
Right.
Because I'm not going to make any assumptions of where in California she's from. But if she's from the warmer part of California, where they have a longer growing season.
I believe Orange County.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So she's from a warmer part of the country, right? Mm-hmm. And now she's in a colder part that has seasons,
right.
shorter growing season, and right. then we have food deserts, because out there they have farmers markets.
Right.
But the access to the food for yeah. people in the inner city has been restricted.
Exactly. Yeah. In the city, especially in Ward 8, it is known that there is like one grocery store that service probably thousands of people mm-hmm. in that ward. And that's just not enough, you know? And when you do go to that grocery store, it's very, the fruits and vegetables are very limited. Is not that clean. Sometimes the grocery stores are not even well lit.
Yeah.
You know? So is very, the grocery stores are just, is very limited and is not appealing.
Okay.
You know, but there are plenty of convenience stores in Ward mm-hmm. 8, you know, or Chinese carryouts,
yeah.
you know, that just flooding our community, and our people are actually going grocery shopping there to like a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Or
processed foods.
Or going to the Chinese yeah. store and getting these wings and rice.
Yeah.
That is just like, yeah. So hearing that lady actually facilitating that class, the first thing I thought, she's so out of touch with the Black community.
Yeah.
She has no competency, no court. She's just not in tune with our culture. Because if she was, she wouldn't have made that statement.
Right.
So I had to go back to school and become a dietitian.
So around what time was that when you decided to go back to school?
That was, I want to say I graduated, that was like when I was in my late 20s.
So you already had a degree.
I already had a degree.
And then you went back to school to get your degree for nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
What was that process like for you?
Oh my gosh. So I think I was a little bit more focused because when you are a second career student, you have more responsibilities than you were when you first went to school.
Right.
So I was a little bit more focused. It was hard. It was challenging because I was working jobs that was very, very stressful or expected a lot, had a lot of duties, but I still had to go to school. It was tough. But I will say this, I did land a job with the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics in their DC office, and they supported my education, whereas I wanted to go back to school and become a dietitian. So they allowed me to go to school throughout the day.
Okay.
Most jobs won't let you go to school like at 10 o'clock during the day or 11 o'clock during the day to take classes. So they did support that. But it was really hard. It was long nights of studying, trying to make ends meet and trying to, you know, do that work life balance.
What kept you going through all that?
My goals, I knew. So this is, I remember when I first decided to go back to school to become a dietitian, I wrote in my one of my diaries, I was like, I will be the number one dietitian in the world. And that's actually kept me going. And that was like almost 20 years ago, you know, 15 years ago. I was like, I'm going to be the number one dietitian in the world, and I will make sure that my community will be, that will learn food and nutrition the proper way. And that was my goal.
Okay. So while you were in school, you were working, you said you were working where?
At the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics. Mm-hmm.
Did you maintain that position throughout school?
Yes.
How long was the schooling for to become a dietitian?
So because I went back, I had some of the courses that I already taken under my environmental science.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like about 3 years undergrad because I had to work. And then it was 2 years of master's, and then it was a year and a half for internship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the process of becoming a registered dietitian
was about 6-7 years.
7 years, all right. Mm-hmm. Which is undergrad,
master's,
and
internship.
An internship.
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone who wants to do this, that's the path it would take.
Yep.
Whew. That's quite a bit. So throughout that journey, undergrad and master's degree, do you have any challenges?
Of course. When I first applied for my internship, I can be honest, I didn't get my internship on the first go around, which was devastating, but I kept going. I wanted, because I really wanted to become a dietitian. So what I did was I entered my master's program. And then during my first year of master's program, I learned that the dietetics program was offering this ISPE program. And the ISPE program is like a long distance program that allow people who work and go to school, still work and still go back for their and still complete their internship. But it's for those people who didn't get accepted on their first round.
Okay.
Right. So I was like, well, shoot, I'm going to go through that program. Mm. So I, what happened was after my first year, after completing my first year of my master's program, I applied to the ISPE program, got accepted, and completed that, my internship for a year. It was a year and a half. And after I finished my internship, I went back and completed my master's.
Okay.
And then at that simultaneously, when I when I was in school for my master's, I just went on and took the exam, my dietetic exam.
Just for my own edification and as well as the listeners, what is the internship like?
So when you do a traditional internship for to become a dietitian. Is very easy. I'm not going to say very easy, but they have the traditional way is you get accepted to a university. That program already have your internships set up. Mm-hmm. But if you go the non-traditional route, like I did, you have to actually go and find your preceptors. So I had to find people to basically become my preceptors who will precept me through my whole internship. So you get accepted into a program, but you have to find your, you have to do all the lead work.
Okay.
So I had to go find my own clinicals. I had to go find people who wanted to be my preceptor for community nutrition. I have to go, you have to go do that lead work, which is twice as hard because a lot of people don't want to take on that responsibility or they don't have time.
Yeah. So just an extra layer of challenge.
Yep.
All right. So once you graduated school,
mm-hmm.
with the, after your internship and passed the test and everything, what was your next move?
My next move was I started the Food Jonesy blog.
Okay.
So I wanted to, the blog started out as actually trying to create awareness of how Black communities or Black families eat and provide recommendations. At the same time, I was working at a hospital and I, you know, like did some one-on-one nutrition counseling there. But primarily, I was really focusing on building up my Food Jonesy blog.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you still do the blog, right?
No, not in that sense of Food Jonesy blog. Well, the blog that we kind of like do now is basically what goes on into the business, goes on in the business. So if we get like a sponsorship or we partner with someone or if I want to write an article about some type of issue that I'm having, like with clients or just recently or a year or two ago, I wrote an article about why do I have to eat like white people? So that conversation started, it started when I start, you know, seeing clients and the first question they would ask, do I got to eat like white people to eat healthy? So I wrote an article on that, which translated into my blog.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the blog is what transitioned into your current business.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. What is your whole current setup? Because I know in talking to you before the interview, we talked about that your passion of working with chefs. And mm-hmm. I think I was on one of your, you did an Instagram live. Mm-hmm. I think you do those quite frequently. And looking at your social media, you seem very involved and caring about the community. So. Yeah, how has your business evolved over the years?
So when I first started my business, I did just wanted to focus on just one-on-one nutrition counseling. Now, to be transparent here, when you do one-on-one nutrition counseling, is the reimbursement rate is so low. So I was just like, is no way that I can survive off of just one-on-one nutrition counseling. So I wanted to start building nutrition programs and just like offering it to like Medicaid programs. So I wanted to build nutrition programs for DC Medicaid insurances. I wanted to get into that arena. You know, I thought if I really wanted to actually help people, I have to meet them where they are. You know, a lot of African-Americans at that time, they didn't come to dietitians and get one-on-one nutrition counseling.
So that's great. That's a great point. Cause I know, so in our communities, one, going to the doctor was always kind of a taboo subject, and especially for Black men. But how has that translated for you as a dietitian over your time in the industries?
Because there's not a lot of Black dietitians.
Yeah.
So a lot of, I mean, just to throw out some statistics, out of 100,000 plus dietitians, only 2.7% of them are Black. You know, 91% are white women. Yeah. So I don't, but I do know that when clients do come to me, they always say, "Oh my gosh, I finally found a Black nutritionist."
Oh, so and you have people that are seeking out
Black, all the time.
That they're already in the process of seeking out a nutritionist, but they're looking for someone that gives them a little bit of representation that may understand their background a little bit better.
Yes.
Okay.
It's always easier to receive healthcare information from someone that looks like you, because you it's like this thing, like, you know where I'm coming from,
right?
You know the culture, you know our struggles, so
limitations and understanding of what I actually have access to,
right? So, and there's no judgment zone.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that I eat pig feet, because you know how we roll. So it's that, and it's also there's just not a lot of Black dietitian who owns their own business, you know, who does this one-on-one nutrition counseling thing in private practice, who, you know, most dietitians are in a hospital setting.
Oh, yeah.
Very few dietitian and very, very few Black dietitian owns their own practice. Yeah.
My limited experience with dietitians is through the corporate setting, because I've done corporate chef work, and there's always one that's assigned to an account, but usually they're assigned to like 50 or so accounts, so their face is in every single, and like you said, it's usually a white, young white female, or just a white female dietitian, and they're attached to every single cafe, but like they stop by, I don't know, 2-3 times out of the year. I've worked for health insurance, I've worked for banks, and it's all pretty much the same. You see them, when you see them, they make recommendations to the corporate menus.
Yeah.
And that's about it. But I've been, my relationship to that is I've been tasked to do like healthy cooking workshops through the corporate setting. And like afterwards, the Q&A between the diverse background of the people that are there is like, the recipe that's sent from corporate is like, a quinoa tabbouleh, which has its own issues. And anyway,
exactly.
Right. And then I'm pitching to like a staff. What was my first in the insurance company? I did a cooking demo. 80% of my crowd was Black, and the recipe they sent, I'm like, this is not going to resonate with anyone.
Exactly.
Like, so what I had to do was write my own. I was like, all right, here's something that's more relatable that you can actually have access to, because I know the stores you guys are shopping at around here. At the time, there was no Whole Foods in the area. There was no Wegmans. There was no organic grocer, Sprouts. None of that was there. It was just...
And let me tell you a funny story. It's when I started to do these nutrition programs for these Medicaid health plans, it was like giant corporations that's in DC, like people, these organizations that's been around for years and have known to do food and nutrition programs, they will reach out to me and ask, how are you getting across to the, how are you doing it? How are you getting across to the community? And we've been around for 20 plus years and we still can't get across to the community.
It's almost like you're connecting with them on a human level.
Right. And I'm looking like, because I'm Black and I know what they want. Yeah. These people who create or establish these communities, they probably have that intentions of helping a community, but they just don't know, they just can't get connected to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying to say that in a very diplomatic way.
I think we both are. So, like, I worked at one place for a company as a contract feeder, and we had a healthy food option.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wondering why we track the sales and the waste. It's like, the requirement was like, you need to make 25 of these meals a day out of a building of 600. You should be able to sell 25. But with those, the one thing had to stick to the menu, or the recipe exactly. I'm selling two a day, three a day, a good day would be five. And they're like, well, what's the problem? I was like, well, the space you guys built these recipes is in a vacuum of your own environment.
Yes.
The accounts in which you're sending these out to are in the real world where you have a more diverse background.
Yep.
So I have people of Indian descent. I have people of African-American descent. Just
right.
More than just the people that are in that kitchen. Right. We know who they are. This is the people in that kitchen making those recipes, or the dietitians that were putting those recipes down. It's like, oh, well, my family loves these.
Right.
It's like, well, not everyone's your family. Family.
Exactly. And that's my point. Right. Exactly.
So what I had to do was work with them and say, hey, all right, well, what are my guidelines? Can I create my own recipes if I work within the guidelines and put them into the system?
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing my own guidelines, and I went from selling three a day to I had meals that would sell out where I was trying to make more during lunch just so I could capture that sale so my numbers would be good. Because, like, well, what's the difference? It's like, well,
exactly.
I'm making food they want to eat. You just told me I can't use fats. I can't use butter. That's not a problem.
Right.
And I forget the amount of grams of salt I was allowed to use, but basically I just didn't use much salt. But I'm like, there's other things and other ingredients I can incorporate into these meals that won't change the caloric value of it.
I mean,
these
organizations will literally contact me and say, I want you to do a nutrition cooking class for our members just to see how I'm setting things up.
Yeah.
They wanted to know exactly how I was doing it.
What is the special magic? I was like, well, tell me what the breakdown of your audience is.
Right.
And I'll formulate a class. Because I did that. I was one of the last places I worked. They say, we want you to do a cooking class. And they handed me a recipe. I'm like, but what's the breakdown of the people that signed up for the class? Because this class you had to sign up for. I was like, all right, what's the breakdown? It's like men versus women. Because I'm like, oh, it's 80% women. And not to stereotype, but I knew the women in that building wanted something lighter.
Right.
Great. So let's balance this out here. Because the recipes you guys sent, they're not going to eat this.
Right.
And that wasn't even a racial thing. Right. It was just they hadn't considered the audience. Because it was mostly white women in the audience. But the recipe they sent was just too heavy because I've talked to these people. My job was to interact with the customers. I was like, you guys haven't interacted with these people, and you like the recipe selection you guys sent just doesn't match the audience.
It's just like they would say, like one organization was like, well, these are the foods we have. It was almost like a test. Could you create a recipe that will be well received by the community? So they had black-eyed peas, they had, you know, just these different types of, they had black-eyed peas, some herbs, and I want to say an eggplant. And they was really, I felt like they was really trying to see how would this black woman create something that this black community would eat so we can just duplicate it. Little do they know, I had to work with my chefs, but we knew how to create a dish that would be well received and liked by, you know, the community. And it was like, it's they just didn't understand that it's the flavor. You know, you don't have to use salt, you know, to flavor a food. It's the flavor. It's the presentation. It's the connection. It's all of that. And it's just all of those qualifications that you need in order to relate to the black community.
Yeah, community as a whole. It's important to have a diverse outlook on things. Because I can say, even from my perspective, we all have our own biases and things that are blocking. So when I started out, I had the blinders on of a chef.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that the people in my building didn't know what Swiss chard was. I'm like, oh, well, great. I got this beautiful rainbow Swiss chard in. It tastes delicious. I know they love spinach. This is even better. And everybody's like, what is that? And why is it like, because I had rainbow. She's like, why, what are all the colors? Like, what is this? It's like, just try it. So I had to do a sampler because my ignorance, I know what Swiss chard is. I've grown it. Why don't, it's like, oh, that's right. I had this experience because of what I've been doing.
Right.
So I got to take a step back, and I had to talk to my staff. They're like, yeah, they're not going to know. Of course they don't know what that is. We don't know what that is. I was like, oh, okay. So that's fair.
But at the same time, you do want to introduce new foods.
Absolutely. But it's also, I just had to accept the fact that I didn't go about it the right way of introducing it. I just put it out on the menu. And then they come in and see it. They see it, and they're like, oh, is it spinach? And I did lie and say, yeah, it's basically spinach. And everyone loved it. But then I had to do a whole, I was like, oh, once I realized the apprehension people had, like, oh, well, let me go about this differently. Let me introduce them to Swiss chard. Let me let them see what the raw product looks like.
Because it's like, it's not that, like, people don't want to try new foods. Yeah. It's just, you just have to, like, almost not convince them, but you have to prepare it in a way that they will like. Black people like flavor. You can't just come up there.
Make it something they can understand.
Yes. Right. Or,
Because I had the same issue when I introduced collard greens to the other half of the building. I was like, oh, I thought wrong. All right. Let me do the same thing. Let me introduce this. Let me explain to you what it is. No, it's not spinach. Yes, it is delicious. Yes, you should try it because some people... My background is growing up, my dad's from the South, so we grew collard greens. Like, one of my early fond childhood memories is him showing me how to properly clean them, how to strip them off and rinse them, and like the process of cooking them, and the fact that they taste better the next day, and the pot liquor, all that.
Right.
But I had that memory that's not everyone's, from the same area, not everyone has that same experience because we're all from, they migrate to that area, they don't know.
Exactly. And that's just like, and I shouldn't laugh at this, but like when going back to the black eyed peas, you know, I had some of my white colleagues, they make it into a salsa dip and be like, this is so good. They take a can of black eyed peas and make it into black eyed pea salsa. It's like salsa. Like they just take salsa and add black eyed peas, but they, instead of it being like a liquid base, it's just the primary base is black eyed peas, tomatoes, onions, green peppers.
I'm not
stuff.
Making a face,
and I'm like, see, that's why you can't connect to the community, because ain't nobody gonna take no blue tortilla chip and dip in some black eyed pea salsa. Now, if you're gonna make black eyed peas, you gotta make it how we can identify it, And they're like, oh.
Yeah. Because I had one of those things, a healthy meal.
So it's black almost like whitewashing.
Salad. Essentially. And they said black eyed pea salad. I was like, that's not going to work. Granted, I will give them the fact that the recipe was good and it did taste good. I'm like, but they're not going to accept this form. Let me make this a warm salad. And we're not going to call it a salad. We're just going to call it sauteed black eyed peas. We're just going to call it. Yeah. That way there's an understanding that no, it's not the traditional ones you're used to. But it's the same flavors of it, but healthier.
Exactly.
And they're like, no, we got to do this. I'm like, all right, we're going to do it both ways. And I guarantee you which one. Well, let's see which one sells more.
And which one sells more.
I turned the salad into sauteed black eyed peas. But I'm like, you just got to connect. Because that wasn't even just for the black community in that building. It was for, because it's Wilmington, Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
So even the everyone else that was from that area, their experience with black eyed peas was from the local soul food spot.
Right.
Which was okay at best, but that was their introduction, is stewed black eyed peas.
Right.
So me turning into a salad is like, oh, that's a new idea. Yes, it's cute, but let's walk them to it, not like just leap to the whole cold beans are used to having warm.
And you gotta have some cornbread with it.
Cornbread croutons. But it was a process. But yeah, so you've worked on you have the understanding of connecting with the community,
mm-hmm.
Just looking at it from their point of view.
Right.
Where
right.
someone else may just come in and say, well, this is what the guidelines say. It's like, yes.
Yes.
But how can they relate to that? And what do they have access to?
And then we have to understand the dietary guidelines. That primary committee is made up of 20 people. And out those 20 committee members, only two of them are people of color.
Yeah.
Everyone, majority of them are white women, then white males, and then one black doctor and one Latina. So it's like you all creating these recommendations for people, for I guess the whole United States. But if you think about it, the community that needs the most help are Black or minority communities. Right. So you creating these dietary guidelines where we as dietitians that's in the field have to kind of translate those needs to these people in, you know, based on their culture. Yeah. You know, like I just can't tell someone that is Black that, hey, the dietary guideline just said eat a fourth of a cup of papaya.
Yeah.
I have to be able to take that information and make it cultural acceptable.
Yeah.
So it's just hard to, it's a challenge to actually take what, and because I know the sciences, the dietary guidelines is right. These are the things that will help you live, right. You know, become a healthier individual. But I think what they're missing is that cultural piece.
Absolutely.
You know, and I know they're trying to be very inclusive and trying to get, you know, make these subcommittees that right. actually focus on diversity, et cetera, et cetera. But
you can only be but so inclusive if you don't include the people you're exactly, trying to help.
Exactly. And when you go to my plate, the first plate that you see is that general plate is, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't represent diversity. No. It represent mainstream, that main, what is it, that the dominant culture.
Yeah. So with my limited nutritional experience and background, I've done some certifications here and there, but my understanding was people, especially for our communities, a lot of the health issues aren't hereditary like we think they are.
Right.
I said the diets are hereditary.
Yes.
My great-grandmother...
That's a good way you said that.
Absolutely. But, yeah. That's my philosophy. That's what I was told, because part of my job in one of my first like corporate chef positions was I was liaison, and I was my job was to push the healthy nutritional foods onto the building, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I have high blood pressure in my family. I was like, your diet is more hereditary than that is, because right. you can change for the most part. Not everything is, mm-hmm. but for the most part, you can change your health with your diet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
My great-grandmother ate pig feet, all the like the fatty stuff, but mm-hmm. I also have an understanding of the fact that the food is different from then to now.
Mm-hmm.
So she was eating a cleaner product because she was eating it from the farm.
Right, right.
Whereas now we're going through processors, and the feed that they're getting may mm-hmm. not necessarily, so the health of those animals is a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So people just have to, I've always tried to approach it from that aspect.
Right.
And for you, you mentioned, we talked about it before, is like you incorporated chefs more into your process. What was your thought with incorporating chefs into your routine and understanding and like helping people?
I always laugh because when people contact me, the first thing they always say, hey, Chef Jonesy. They call me Chef Jonesy. I don't know why. But I'm one of those dietitians that don't cook, right? So I am one of those... I know my sciences. I know my stuff. I know what foods work together. I know the nutrients, the interaction, all of the things that you are taught in dietetics, but I don't know the kitchen.
Okay.
So what I did and what I found out just doing just nutrition programming is people love that. They like that, that doing part. Mm-hmm. They love when we bring the chef in. They love to do that action part. They can sit for the education, but they get excited when they're working with a chef.
Well, they're more involved.
You know, people want to learn those fascinating, exciting techniques that chefs do, right?
Yeah.
Even me, I get excited, especially when you have like the dopest chopping skills. I'm like, oh my gosh, right? So, so I brought chefs in to help me elevate my program, to bring a certain component to the program that I wasn't able to give. And they did. One of the challenges that the chefs have though are they they try to, well, I always challenge them to not to use salt in their dish. They can't use salt, you know, and some of them look at me like it's crickets.
Right.
Like, I gotta use salt. That's what enhances the flavor. And then there are others that say, you know what? I'm up for that challenge. Yeah. I can do this. We can. You can definitely not have to use salt and make your food flavorful. Well,
I think many chefs are just used to having an open playground to just pick from all across the world. I can use flavors from everywhere, and things from everywhere. So for some, they're not used to having restrictions.
Right, exactly. But I do tell them, because culinary is such a fascinating art to me, when they are in their zone, in their education zone, I want them to be them. You know, just talking about it, I can just almost see the excitement on people's faces when they actually work with chefs. And most people in disadvantaged communities, they don't have that opportunity to work with a chef. Mm-hmm. You know, some of us think when you get a catering business, some people, you know, they might be good cooks at home. That's the closest that you can get to a chef. But to actually work with a chef that has been trained, had went to school, can show you those trained techniques.
Put the time in to learn and hone their craft.
Honing their craft. That is like on a different level. Yeah. And just to see the participants interact with the chefs, it really brings joy to my heart. So when the chef comes, I do expect them to have some nutrition education.
Okay.
They have to be able to relate to the community. Majority of my chefs are Black, and they love it because it's a way of giving back to the community. They teach them how to plate food. They teach them how to chop properly. It was one program that we had when we told the participants to bring some of their spices from home, mm-hmm. and the chef taught them how to combine different seasonings to make their own seasonings. So they had their personal,
that's awesome,
customized seasonings. So I love chefs. They are so fascinating to me. You're a chef. So it is like they can create a dish just using like little to no ingredients and making it like tasty. Some chefs, I think, but the chefs that I came across,
the chefs that have taken the time, like I said before, that put the time in and work in, not just claiming the title, but have actually earned it and done what they need to do.
And then not to cut you off, but then I like the chef's arrogance. I like their cockiness when they in the kitchen.
That's definitely a thing. Have you done any like nutritional education for chefs or with chefs?
Yes, we do. Some of those chefs that do not have that nutrition education background, we do take them through some training. But when they are in a community, we always send a registered dietitian with them.
Okay.
So, you know, when you're in a community, you know, you don't know who's in that audience. Someone with diabetes, someone with blood pressure, someone with a chronic condition. So I always like to be safe than sorry. So I always have a dietitian there present. So when someone do come up and ask a question, they're there to say, hey, this is what it is. And a chef, I guess, is listening and learning.
Absolutely.
And able to, if a question comes up and there is no nutritionist around, they can kind of like answer that question in that way, but still refer them back to us.
Yeah, fill in some blanks where they can.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been doing through the pandemic? Since you do is community outreach based, how have you been connecting with these people? Because I think the statistic was the Black community was like the most heavily affected by COVID. So how has that affected what you've been doing?
So we have spiked in nutrition counseling.
Oh, okay.
So we saw an increase of clients when it comes to one-on-one nutrition counseling. Because, I mean, and it's for those reasons you said, most Black people were, it wasn't even all, I mean, it was like the statistic, you know, Black people were affected, but it was almost everyone was affected.
Yeah.
Where they wanted to see a dietitian, they needed, a lot of people started to emotional eat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had mental health, started to battle, had mental health challenges that was driving them to either not eat or eat poorly.
Yeah.
Some people had that like fast paced life and was always on a run and ate in restaurants. And when restaurants were closed down, got shut down, they had to come up with ways to fix healthy meals at home.
Yeah.
A lot of people stopped cooking. So they came to, receive those nutrition counseling, recommendations or, tips, throughout services. But on a community base, yeah, we saw a major decline, in that, a lot of, working with vendors that kind of made up a majority of our income.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some really good partners that was like willing to ride it out with us.
Okay.
And they, created a online nutrition program that allowed us to, develop content for their program, and that kept us going. We still are facing some challenges, but still our sponsors, our partnerships with people, our past partners had came through, and like they still ask us to do like online nutrition programs or not online cooking classes that we're doing. So they're very supportive. We're getting ready to create a robust online program that we will continue after COVID. So yeah, it's been challenging, but it's also been, it also gave me an opportunity where I can sit, think, and create.
Mm-hmm.
Create something that I would have never created if life was still normal. You know, I never thought that I was going to do stuff online or make these videos and package them up in different ways or do podcasting. So it kind of just gave me that opportunity again to create and come up with new content that people want.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they still want that on that in-person counseling and that in-person cooking class. You know, you got people that still want that. But I kind of like the online stuff.
Good. So going forward, coming out of the pandemic, whenever that is to be, you're going to continue on with the online. You've added another component to your business.
So yeah, we're going to have a hybrid.
Okay. Manage to adapt. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to have a hybrid. Yeah.
So what are some of the things... Talking about your business, what are some of the things that you can offer if someone's looking, if they're in the DC area and they're looking for your services, what would they?
They should expect to receive like high quality nutrition services.
Okay.
We, my team, from the dietitians to the chef, we are all culturally competent. That is something that I really, really work hard on, is making sure anyone that is employed under Food Jonesy is cultural aware, have this cultural awareness about all cultures. We don't like to provide information that makes people feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Or make people feel like I can't eat my traditional foods anymore. Mm-hmm. People who seek for my services, seek for our services, they need... We're fun. We're innovative. We're exciting. We have no time to sugarcoat anything. We tell you the truth. We're giving you real nutrition, nutrition that's going to help you adapt for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That you can incorporate into your lifestyle, your current lifestyle. We don't do diets. We don't believe in dieting at all. We believe in making your foods healthy and it works for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, was that a mouthful?
That was perfect. So along those lines, we discussed the challenges of COVID and some you've gone throughout your career. So what's something you wish you would knew? You wish you knew, like once you transitioned out of what you were doing before and you decided to go full time into this and go back to school. What's something that you wish you had known beforehand, or something as well that you would give someone who's starting off in this career or is interested in becoming a dietitian?
To be honest, when I started my business, I didn't have any business education. Like I didn't know nothing about business. Okay. I just did it. What I know now, which that I wish I could have known, is more financial literacy.
Okay.
You know, that would have kind of prevented me from making stupid mistakes, you know, as a
the growing pains.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I also wish I've known, like, that I guess I'm working with people, you know, when I say working with people, like being more, what they call it, emotional intelligence.
Okay.
You know, 'cause working with groups of being a boss is difficult.
Yeah.
But trying to manage people is even more difficult.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish I could have had a little bit of emotional intelligence that can really be like, you know what? Yeah, she's not going to be good for the team, or having a little bit more patience, you know?
Yeah, I've definitely had conversations about probably weekly about yes. managing styles and like understanding how to run a business, and that yes. just because you're good at something. Actually, I'm probably going to have to do a standalone episode about that.
Yeah.
I've got some material, just people understanding just because someone is very talented doesn't mean they're a good fit for your team.
Exactly. And just because you want to be an entrepreneur doesn't mean that
you should be.
Right. Exactly. Because it was many days that I was like, yeah, this is not for me. Not today. You know, but what I did, I mean, I definitely would have just really planned better, you know, just planned better.
Okay. Oh, before we get out of here, I think I've probably said it and you might have mentioned a couple times, food deserts. Can we, just for the people listening who don't know, can you describe what that is?
So food deserts are when people who have, a lack of access.
Yeah.
To the necessities, you know, who have limited resources to things that you need to food or water supply, anything, things that you need to live a healthier lifestyle, right. You know, so.
So like an environment with no grocery store or one grocery store to a large population, or there's even environments where there's no grocery store within the community.
Exactly.
And just fast food chains and corner stores.
Right, right. Okay. And just not having that resource, just not having readily available resources so you can improve your life,
right.
You know, so you can have that health, having that health information right there, or that food desert can come in, you know, like, financial literacy, not being educated on finance or health information,
right.
Or you know, food and nutrition, proper food and nutrition. You know, you can have the resources, but if you don't know how to prepare or know what to do with those resources, that's a desert.
Yeah.
That's a
I mean, and even once you have that information, it's easy to tell someone, hey, you should incorporate more vegetables into your diet, but the local corner store only has a limited access. Because I know some, like, so New York, the bodegas, there's some produce there, but some places the produce doesn't look good. It's not appealing.
Exactly.
So
right.
I know a lot of places have responded with community gardens and hoping, educating through that way,
mm-hmm.
Because there's no access to it. There's no grocery store. If there is, the grocery store is limited because they don't really care about the community.
Exactly.
They're just trying to turn a buck.
Exactly. Or going to like a convenience store and just having like three options, and which one of those options is the healthiest.
Right.
You know, some people just don't know.
Yeah.
Or you can go to a major grocery store and have like 15 types of brand breads, and you like, how, which one is true whole wheat?
Right.
So
there's also like the socioeconomical
absolutely
thing behind that, because you can go to the same grocery store chain in two different areas, more economically advanced area, and they'll have, like you said, a variety of things, and the fresh produce part will be half the store, whereas if you go into a more impoverished area, there'll be one small aisle, one section, and there's only one variety of this and that kind of thing.
And the carrots up there be looking all dead.
Mm-hmm. Dried out. not taken care of. It's the last thing that's on the truck.
Right.
All right. So I've taken up enough of your time. All right. How can people find you?
Oh, very simple. They can follow me on social media under Food Jonesy. We have three social media platforms that we are really active on, and that's Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Mm-hmm. They can go to my website at foodjonesy.com, learn more about us.
Can you spell that for me?
Food Jonesy, FOODJONEZI. com.
Yeah. That's why, that's so everyone knows it's all right.
So yeah, they can definitely go on the website, contact us through the website, or they can just give us a call. So yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to once again thank Charmaine Jones for sitting down with me today. And as always, thank you, the listeners, for being on this journey with us. Also, if you enjoy the podcast and would like to support this and future episodes via donation, our Cash App tag is Culinary Voices. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Culinary Voices. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review and a 5-star rating to help spread the word. Join us for a new episode next Wednesday. I'm your host, Nathaniel Baker, and this has been the Culinary Voices Podcast.